Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 375. My name is John Morgan. Cold Coffee is with me, hanging out here at the all-new, upgraded, expansive, voluminous, I don't even know if that word makes sense. Casa de Cold Coffee with my array of frosty beverages here in front of me, and you chugging on a gallon jug of agua like a healthy you training know, individual.
You know, as we do those who train for MMA. You know, honestly, I've always liked the taste of water, or just like water, but I can't afford that like bottled water shit, so right. I don't mind tap water.
Right.
But I like the taste of our water out here. I know a lot of other people freak out when I tell them I drink tap water. I'm like, drink tap water my whole life, but some people like
that same tap water from the lake where they're finding all the dead people out there.
This tastes like maybe like 70s mob hit.
For anybody that doesn't know, I mean, obviously the water is well treated, but our water source here is called Lake Mead, and it's at a record low, like to the point that they're starting to freak out that like maybe we'll run out of water. Yeah, exactly, which is crazy at a time when the city's growing faster than ever. But it's receded so low that within the last couple weeks or months or so, they're starting to find like barrels of bodies on the thing, and the police are basically just like, yeah, and be ready for more.
Yeah. It's going to keep happening.
As the water gets lower, you're going to find them, so it's kind of funny. Surely the water goes through a bit of a treatment. I don't think it just comes straight out of the lake.
You know, I haven't found, like, any, like, bloody water and like, bits. But, no, I mean, like, and they say our water is treated fine. You know, I mean, I like it. It is very hard. Like, our water is considered very, very hard out here. So if you try to use it in things like, say, like CPAP or, like, a humidifier. Now I've been realizing that my music room, when I went to take my since I have more time on my hands since I'm always home now because I'm trying to be good. I was like, well, I'm going to really try to like learn these instruments that I bought, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I took the guitar to go get it set up. You know, I took the electric guitar to go get set up. And she's like, oh, so are you humidifying your house? Are you humidifying your room? I'm like, what's that? You know, what does that mean? She's like, well, it's like, it's so dry out here that the wood in your instruments will start to bow and they don't look at it. Like you don't see it when you're looking at it, but if you would actually be somebody that plays, you could see how it affects and stuff. So
that affects the sound, I imagine.
It does, because when it has the proper humidity, like which is like between 40% and like 70%, I don't know, in a room or whatever, it does sound better. So I actually have a humidifier running upstairs in the music room. And
just
when
to humidify
the music
your
room,
instruments. The music the room. Look at this. I told you the new Casa de Cold Coffee's lit, bro. My man got a music room.
I do go sit in there and like look at the instruments that I don't know how to play. I have drums that are broke down, but I can't play them because of the HOA. But that is the only instrument I have like a firm grip on. I have a keyboard that I'm like, oh, I don't really know how to play that. I have a bass that, oh, I don't know how to play that. The electric's getting set up and stuff, but whatever. So I told her about how I didn't have anything. She's like, oh, no. Like, you're doing it wrong. And I was like, I'm sorry. She's like, you need to do this. And so I got the humidifier. But what I realized is you can't just put regular water in it because all the minerals and the stuff in the water, that would get you disperse, and then it would just fuck up your equipment and it'd fuck up the humidifier and all that other stuff. So I never really thought as much about water as I have lately.
So let me get this straight then. You use bottled water in your music room humidifier,
and
but you drink tap water.
Am I doing it wrong? Am I doing it backwards?
I mean,
I care more about the equipment than I do about me. Like, I think I could process the minerals. And
I mean, I don't know
but
much.
Now that you say it like that, it does sound pretty ridiculous.
I mean, in your extensive mixed martial arts training, and you, as you guys are talking about caring for your body, I mean, your teammates might like to know that you give better hydration to your instruments than to yourself.
Well, you know, I swear, after the class, I just want to die anyway, so I'd rather the instruments live on beyond me.
I swore that we wouldn't just do extensive training updates every week, but we are about a week in now, week and a half in, so give us the quick rundown. Is everybody hanging in there?
Everybody's hanging in there, man. we were doing more like grappling stuff today, which is like I get paired up with, of course, because since I'm a big boy, I get paired up with all the big boys. So the main guy that I've been working with is he's about 6'3", 360 fucking pounds. He used to play football, and I'm just like, I don't want to fight. I'm like, that's why I don't want to fight at the end of this. I don't want to fight these big boys. But today I was going with another guy who was about my height, and he was like 290 or something like that. He's still strong. Both of them have youth on their side. But no, I mean, like, the guys have been hanging in there. The team media has been hanging in there. Oscar's been doing awesome. I mean, but Oscar's all about it. I mean, Oscar was like a not fit dude.
Right.
And it was somebody that he liked working on and actually would run and do all that other kind of crazy shit that we see crazy.
We're like, what are you doing? What he's are you like, doing, bro? He's like, I'll meet you at the bar. I go to the gym first. We're like, oh, silly.
Oh, you're wasting drinking time. but no, everything's good. I mean, like, we're learning stuff. But, man, there's been a couple days, like, yesterday was a really heavy, bad cardio day where there are points where I either want to just quit or throw up and part of it. And they're like, and that's the biggest challenge that they're saying, you know, is like it's the mental side, getting over these things. But, you know, so we're trying to, you've seen Extreme Couture. So there, when you walk in the main area, there's the bag and the, there's a mat area to the right-hand side. There's this green, like, AstroTurf area right in the middle where they run, push sleds, other stuff, and then off to the left is equipment.
Yep.
Yesterday, we were doing this part where the one of the other days, we were pushing, like, these buckets down, almost like pushing, like, sleds, but when they don't want to put sleds, you're still bending over on these, like, large, big buckets and then pushing them out, and it was totally burn you out. Yesterday was worse, where it was like they gave us these little pads to put on the ground, so they wanted then to bear crawl back and forth and then do all this other stuff. And then at that point, like, my arms were just failing, so I didn't have the strength or the ability to bear crawl. But then you don't want to quit, so then I'm trying to, like, bear crawl my ass and then crawl, but then it's like AstroTurf, so then it's burning up my knees, and I got rug burn on my foot and stuff, and I'm just like, this sucks. But honestly, at the very end of it, I felt good about, like, as much as I hated, and there were a couple points where I was like, all right, I think I'm actually going to throw up now, you know. I felt good after the fact. So there's those little wins that are happening while all the time still feeling like, oh, shit, you know, like, this sucks. I'm down 6 pounds, so that's good. Trying to, you know, the intermittent fasting is still sort of working in the same time. You know, it does, unfortunately, you know, right now I'm in the eating period. I could have beer right now, but I just want some tap water. I just want some delicious tap water with
some
the
dead bodies. Face and,
with the little, you know, dead people in them. But we're starting getting the point where I think we have started learning some techniques when it comes to striking. I think sparring, even though technically in the program is not supposed to happen for like another 4 weeks,
right?
The way the coaches there, I can see where they want to get into that as well. They want to teach us that sort of stuff, which I love the fact that these guys, you could tell that they're actually taking an interest and actually taking pride in seeing growth.
Awesome.
So I think that they want to see us get to that sooner,
yep,
instead of waste all these weeks with just doing cardio, which is not a waste, obviously, you know, I mean, like, that's great, but I'm sure they don't want to just be like, hey guys, run some more. I think they want to actually teach techniques,
sure,
and feel like they're actually imparting themselves.
Well, I mean,
so.
I I'm a big Justin James fan. Obviously, he coached my kid for a while, man.
Nasty. Oh, he's nasty when it comes to, like, running. He's the one that I hear is like, it's just a warm-up, guys. I'm like, as we're dying, he's like, come on, it's just a warm-up. You got this. And I'm just like, I hate you. He was
like
burning
Justin
us out, man. No, but I appreciate what those guys are doing. But, yeah, I mean, it's good so far, but I'd be lying if there weren't days where I was just like, can I come up with an excuse to not go today? I just have not allowed myself to do that.
Good for
that,
you, man.
You know, so.
Good for you.
It's getting there, but it's a work in progress, man. But I still feel there's so much to go. There's so much to go, but it feels good so far. I'm starting to feel a little nagging things, but I think that's partially just from non-use, but also I there's days I'm like, I feel every bit my age seeing these young kids in there, and I'm just
probably sleeping better than you have in years, though.
I've been sleeping like a baby.
I bet.
Like a baby.
Just
when it goes out, it's done. I'm gone. But it's been good, man. It's been good.
That's awesome, man. Well, keep up the good work. Keep up the good work, man. I'm proud of you for doing that. I'm not gonna lie. I'm also a little bit exhausted this week, but not because I've been working out, unfortunately. Yeah. But I just had a crazy week last week, man. But it was such a cool weekend, man. You know, obviously this past weekend flew out to Philadelphia and got to do the back-to-back CFFC shows, which was great.
Yeah.
Worked with Dean Thomas, which was awesome. I mean, that guy is a blast. You know what I mean? Like, I've known him for years, but never had a chance to work with him. Just always kind of would chat in a hotel lobby or in an airport or whatever. So I actually got a chance to work with him, and he got a chance to see the CFSC culture, which is cool, man. There's just a lot of really cool people there. And he was like, man, I love it here, dude. I was like, I know you're gonna be fighting for Punk's job, man, now that he's gone. But he was great. For anybody that didn't get a chance to watch it, CFSC 109, we did that on Friday night. At the very least, I'd recommend you go check out the main event. There's this kid named Manuel Sosa who looks like an absolute monster, man. He's 24 years old. He's 9-0 with 9 finishes. Has finished every single fight in the first or second round. Got another one done this week. And the kid, I got to think he ends up on Contender Series. If not, I mean, maybe they just bring him straight in for a fight, man.
Bring him straight in. You never know.
Kid's a beast, man. To be honest with you, this is the second time he's fought for CFFC. I thought after the first one. He's very much, you know, he's in great shape. You can see it. I mean, he's young. He's 24. He's aggressive with his striking, but he's got great grappling as well. It's just, there's no place to rest. You know what I mean? He stays aggressive both with his striking and with his submission abilities. And, man, and here's the other thing that I thought was really impressive about this kid as you look at him. I mean, I've seen him fight twice now, but you look at his opponent's records. And I will say a big part of it was made up by one opponent, but he's 9-0. And coming into this week, I didn't add in this week's records, but coming into this week, he was 8-0. And his opponent's combined records that he had fought was 44-11. So you're not talking about, like, cans. Now, I think I want to say, like, one of them was, like, 17-3 or something, so that takes a big part of it. But that's still, like, 27-8 or what. You know what I mean? Like, it's – so it's – because you always worry about that, right, when you see somebody and they fought. You know, if you see somebody that's 8-0, but they kind of got that boxing model where it's like, well, that guy was 0-10 and that guy was 1-12. Like, what do we really know about you? But the kid looks like the real deal. So if you haven't seen the main event – definitely go recommend you check out the main event. It was a replacement main event, but it turned out to be a really good one. And then Saturday night was Fury Grappling 4, another one of these fun grappling events. Man, I really, really love doing these grappling events. And the fact that we get to use UFC talent is awesome. Sean Brady in the main event tapped out Ben Saunders. And it was a 185-pound fight, so Sean didn't have to cut all the way down to 170. And Ben said afterwards, he's like, that dude is the strongest dude. Like, he's like insanely strong. So everybody talks about, like, just how strong Sean Brady is. And he got the submission, looked good. And Sean, you know, was talking to Sean throughout the week about kind of what's next, because he's waiting on a fight right now. Dude, he's calling out all the big names, man. He's ready for some big fights, man. So hopefully he gets something booked real, real soon. It's been a while, so he's waiting to be booked. So he had, after the Chiesa fight, you remember after the Chiesa fight, he broke his nose in that fight, right?
Okay.
So if you'll remember the Chiesa fight, and I wrote a story about this last week, but, you know, I talked to him, Sean Brady is the biggest fight fan in the world. Like, this dude watches every single fight. And apparently, it's probably worth checking out his social media. He does, like, some picks, some recommendations for bets and stuff like that, but he's been on, like, an 80% run so far this year in 2022.
Yeah, that was November 2021. I guess so, it hasn't been that long.
It hasn't been that long, but it's been a while. So what happened was, in that Chiesa fight, he broke his nose in the first punch of the fight, right? And so as he was explaining to me, he's like, I can't breathe out of my nose. He's like, and the blood is just running down my throat. He's like, so I can't breathe there either. He's like, and everybody's like, oh, Sean Brady doesn't have good cardio. He's like, bro, I have great cardio. He's like, but I can't breathe, you know? Yeah. And so it's wearing me out. And so he had some surgery to repair his nose. I guess he's broken it a couple times, so he got everything fixed there. Had to take some time off for that. And he's ready, man. He's wanting a big name. You know, I know he was talking about maybe Bilal Muhammad. He was talking about Wonderboy. And, you know, he's not a big talker. Sean Brady is not a big talker. He was a respectful dude. But he did say something about Wonderboy. He's like, well, I know Wonderboy just wants to fight, like, strikers and stuff, but, bro, you're in the top 10, man. You got to fight whoever you got to fight, man. I don't think you get to say yes and no to certain individuals or whatever. So, you know, he's
– People have been doing that for a long, long time, though.
They had. But his thing was, but I like it because Sean's not a big talker, and he was just like, dude, if you're there, like, give up your spot if you're not going to fight anybody. You know what I mean? But you are right. People have been picking fights for a long time. So he's waiting to get booked for something big. But that was good. But the big news of the night, man, the craziness of the night, man, the CFFC president, Brad Boland, took on Clay Guida in the co-main event, right? It was supposed to be Clay Guida versus Alex Caceres, so I was super excited about that. Guida and Bruce Leroy, fan favorites, exciting fighters. But Caceres showed up, and I don't know if it was the flight or you know what exactly happened, but from the minute he got there, he's like, dude, he's like, I'm having some back spasms. And so they tried to work with him and try to see what they could do, and finally he's just like, dude, I'm not going to be able to go. So the day of the event, Brad Boland, the president, who is a black belt, but to his said he's probably rolled like twice this year. Like he hasn't been training consistently. He was like, I'll take it. I'll do it. Like, I'll do it. I'll jump in there and I'll do it. And Clay, to his credit, took it. He did ask for one revision, and that was – so anytime there's a UFC fighter, you can't do heel hooks just because, like, you know, the UFC is basically like, look, we'll give you these guys to use, but no heel hooks because we don't want anybody – ripping their knees out and being on the sidelines. So that's automatically in the guidelines if you're a UFC fighter. But Clay was like, I want no leg locks at all. And Brad was like, all right. But Brad even admits, he's like, it kind of sucked because that's like the best part of my game. He's like, but he's like, I thought, you know, I'm going to go for it anyway. And so Brad, man, to his credit, stepped in on like a couple hours notice, man. And again,
that's awesome.
Oh, just so cool to see it do it, man. It, you know, and granted, it's a grappling match, not a cage fight, but nobody wants to go out there and look dumb. No, you know what I mean? No. And he went out there and looked fantastic. It was funny because there was one point where like Clay's leg was there, and like Brad kind of grabbed it and kind of like, I don't think he hesitated. I haven't even asked him about this. I think he was just kind of trying to show like, I could have got this. Like, you know what I mean? Like it was there. You know, I was kind of joking. I'm like, just take the DQ. Just take the DQ. But man, it was so cool to see him. I mean, the guy step up on, you know, and here's the best.
I don't know if you try to go for a DQ with a UFC fighter.
That's probably true. Especially if you're the president of the promotion, right? They're like, credit to Clay for taking it. Credit to Brad for taking it. But it was a fun match. Clay did end up getting the submission late in the match. And you could see it visibly about 4 minutes in. It was an 8-minute match. About 4 minutes in, you could see, like, oh, Brad's energy's gone. Like, yeah, he's done. Now he's in survival mode.
I can only imagine not being prepared to go into something like that. Like,
and it's Clay Guida.
Yeah.
Like, not like it's just some ridiculous dude. It's Clay Guida who, like, probably did an 8-minute grappling match in the warm-up room just as a, you know, just to get warm. So it was cool, man. It was just so cool to see, like, and it was so cool to see the love he was receiving from everybody there and even online or whatever. Just like, That's dope, dude. You're the president. Yeah. He said. But what was funny is, so we show up to the venue, and he's sitting at his computer because he still had like stuff to do, like work stuff to do. Like, there's.
Did you know he was doing it at that point?
Yeah, but it's not like we have like a big staff at CFFC to just start pushing stuff off. So he still had things that he had to do, like getting some social media stuff scheduled and getting some stuff done. And he was like, you know, an hour and a half before the match, and he's still like knocking this stuff out. It was.
That's awesome.
It was pretty funny. And
would she like calm better? Which feels different? I'm sure it feels. Does it feel like you have less pressure doing the grappling?
So the grappling, so the MMA, I'm obviously like the MMA, like I got that down, dude. The grappling, especially like the new, like high levels, like the, you know, some of the guard variations and stuff like that. Like, I'll admit, I'm not as other, but we got this guy named Jay Regabuto, who's a local black belt and who calls matches like nonstop. Like, he's on like all these other platforms, so he comes in and helps us out.
Is he in your ear or is he on the call?
No, he's on the call.
Oh, that's
and so
good.
Oh man, it makes like basically like me and Dean just like set up, you know, hey, here's who's going, here's what's happening, here's what's at stake, and then Jay takes over and he's like calling everything. And then if we see something we want to ask him about, like, dude, he is phenomenal on the broadcast, so I hope we have him for every grappling match. But he makes it. But I will say this. So the grappling events, the MMA is more my wheelhouse, right? Like, that's
sure.
Like, I can
understand.
I can do that. But the grappling, Rob lets me wear like a t-shirt and shorts. He's like, I want it to be casual. He's like, I want it to be different. So like, literally, like, I'm just wearing my khakis and a black t-shirt. And he's like, and if you guys want to have like a cocktail or something, like, feel free. So, you know, I had like a I had a little bottle of Beam with me. I was having a little whiskey along the way.
Are you talking about like when the little fifths? Or
no, so
little,
what happened was, veteran savvy, I was getting some GoPuff frosty beverages delivered to my room at my hotel because I was going to be there for a couple days.
Advertising for GoPuff. We like many other delivery services.
Many delivery services. And they are a Sean Brady sponsor, though, so I'll give them love for that.
Heard of that one.
If they want to sponsor, I think it started out on the East Coast. I think it started out on the East Coast as actually just like a like a tobacco delivery, that's hence the name GoPuff or whatever. Then they got into like liquor and food and all that. So they're expanding.
The name like GoPuff, I would think, like deliver weed?
They might have delivered a little weed. I mean, you might be able to get a little some, depending on your driver. But yeah, so
bro,
my.
Stop by the dispensary.
So I ordered my frosty beverages, and my minimum order wasn't quite high enough. But I knew I couldn't just keep ordering more beer because I was like, I'll never even be able to finish all that beer. Yeah. So I got a bottle of Jim Beam in there to get my minimum up, and then I brought that to the venue.
Is the minimum just like $25?
Not there. It was like $50.
Oh shit.
Yeah, it was like a $50 minimum. So I had to throw a bottle of whiskey on there.
Well, yeah,
I had to. You know,
I mean, just had to meet minimums. I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for the minimums, you know.
So yeah, so I enjoyed.
So you swig from a bottle while you were doing the broadcast.
No, I poured it over rocks. I poured it over rocks. Come on, man.
You brought a bottle of liquor to it.
Yeah, the bottle. So yeah, those are kind of fun.
That's awesome.
Those are kind of fun. So we did that, which was awesome. Keurig Jeunesse was there, the longtime owner of MixedMartialArts.com, the underground. He came to check out the show, so got to hang out with him a little bit as well. Our buddy Cody Merrow was there as well. So.
I thought I saw some social stuff from Cody.
Yeah, that's Cody's cool. Starting to help us out with some social and doing a little bit of stuff here and there. So, you know, we got some things cooking behind the scenes. But they were all there to kind of hang out a little bit. And
trying to get off that bottle. And you're like, no. This bottle is mine.
Over here. Keep it right here. So, yeah, anytime you can show up with a bottle of whiskey at the broadcast table, you
shabby.
Got me in.
That's not too shabby.
So that was fun. Back-to-back
I think
nights.
That's what Bernie Kosar used to do when he would do some calls. And then he's no longer on the call.
So well, that's yeah. You got to be careful. That's the key. You got to pace yourself.
Moderation.
That is the point where it is moderation. So they got to do that, and then Sunday, you know, I had been looking forward to it for a long time, but man, got a chance to go to the AEW event, All Elite Wrestling at T-Mobile
cool.
with CM Punk, my family, my wife and kid, and I'll be honest, man, I was tired when I got there because I didn't sleep much the Saturday night. Flew home. And was tired, but I was like, let's go from the first match. Like, let's go see it all.
Wow,
boy,
from the very first one?
From the very first match. I think 4:30. I think we left at like 10-something, so wow. We were there for a while. But, bro, the T-Mobile, man, I took a picture of it. It doesn't really do it justice. But, you know, you park in that parking spot over at, like, New York. That's where I usually park, and you come down that little escalator. The whole plaza, Nokia Plaza, in front of T-Mobile, packed. Like,
wow.
I'm talking about. Packed like that place
was it sold out
wrestling fans yeah it was sold out and wrestling wow. fans they show up from the start man so
that's cool.
So it was cool man we had a good time and
but you also didn't just have regular old seats
well we had decent seats I mean
you could have reached out maybe grabed the ropes
yeah I would have had to extend my arm a little bit but yeah
you'd have to put the beer down to do that
yeah, and then you don't want to do that obviously but yes Mr. CM Punk hooked us up very nice with tickets and but what was cool is a couple things. Number one, it was my kid's first event and he was digging it. You know what I mean? And any parent that's here will know what that feeling is. Like, when your kid's enjoying something, like, when you're watching them just, like, take – because it's a big
yeah. –
dude, it's a big show. I mean, their production's on par with UFC and even more because
say,
they got the big –
when's the last time he saw a UFC event? And the last time he saw it was probably an Apex show, right?
Yeah. He's only been to an Apex show over the last couple of years. None that he would remember, so –
I wonder which he'd like better. Well he'd have to see it now when he's older.
He'd have to see it now.
See how he appreciates it.
It's been a while. But
you
know,
it's very different. An Apex show from even a T-Mobile show. But it'd be interesting to see which he'd like better.
But they got that big in-stage setup and all that. You know what I mean?
The ramp that they walked
so
down.
So he was enjoying the heck out of it. Except for the hardcore match. There was a hardcore match that was crazy. And you know, listen. We don't talk a lot of pro wrestling on here, but I got to experience this, so I'm just going to share a little bit of the stories.
We normally don't talk training either, but hey,
good
the
point.
World That's is turned upside down.
Who knows? Up is down, left is right. So, you know, good matches all through the night. It was a long show, and I did see a lot of people that are like...
Long. I had no idea it was that long.
There were a lot of people that were like hardcore wrestling fans that were even like, it was too long. But it was a long show, but it was good. But, like, the third match from the top was this tag team match. And I was like, man, I don't know when they stopped serving beer. So I was like, let me go. I was like, I better go get two. I was like, I'm going to go get two right now.
Which is being very, very, like, just low-key for you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You figure you would have got, like, what do they call them, a drink carrier that has,
oh,
like,
oh, yeah, look at like six or whatever. No, I got two. So it was just, it was like the third match from the top. And I went and got two. By the way, the big 24-ounce beers at T-Mobile.
Yeah.
$17.
I was just thinking about that. I was like, well, if you got six, you'd have to like take a loan out.
$17, bro.
That's crazy.
It's insane. So it didn't stop me from drinking, but it was just an expensive night. So I got to, well, I walked back to my seat, and I'm walking back to my seat, and all of a sudden I'm like I'm looking on the monitor, and there's like people fighting in the stands, you know? I mean, wrestling, not fans, like two wrestlers like going at
still
it.
Still getting
the stands,
very
right?
physical, like this shit's legit.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's the thing that that my wife was saying, that my kid was saying, and obviously anybody that knows wrestling, it's like it is wrong to call it fake. Scripted is the right word,
right?
Because they're doing like that's some physical
the shit
stuff.
They're doing is incredible. It's incredible.
And call it fake.
And it's crazy dangerous, too. I mean, like, if you do it wrong, somebody could get really, really injured. I've seen some where they're, like, balancing on the walls of the venue, running up and down. I'm like, one bad move, one slip, that guy could break a leg. And, like, that's
serious.
You might have called it as fake or scripted you want, but, like, there's real
back
real
injuries, neck injuries
shit happening there.
So I walk out there, and I'm, like, looking on the monitor. I'm like, are those two people in the – because I'm just seeing on the TV as I'm walking. Are those two people fighting in the crowd? I was like, that's crazy. And then I walk out there, and says, I got a beer in each hand, $34 worth of beer that I definitely don't want to spill anywhere. And all of a sudden, like, I'm looking – there's, like, two people fighting over here, two people fighting over – I mean, everywhere. I came to my wife, and I'm like,
what? Oh, because it was a tag team.
5-on-5.
Oh, shit.
And I walked up and I was like, pardon my language here, but I'm like, what the fuck is going on right now, dude? There's people everywhere. Jake Hager's involved in it, who we've obviously seen him. Next thing I know, he's thrown onto some tables that just break, like right in front of us. I mean, literally right in front of us. He's laid out on the ground. But I mean, this match is going everywhere, and it ends up having like some barbed wire, and they like take the rope down, and they're using the hook that's on the corner of the thing. I mean, it was crazy, and I will say, like the the section that we were in, the chair, like they were like throwing people into the chairs, like all the chairs were just like busted up everywhere. And the whole time, I'm trying to balance these these full ass beers in my hand so I don't spill them. I'm like, I'm not having a $17 beer knocked out of my hand, you know. And then my wife's like, give me one, I can help you with one of them. So I was like, thank you, honey. So she's holding one of it. Next thing I look over, she's drinking part of my beer. I'm like, hey, you said you were holding it. You said you were holding it.
You almost left to go get two more, didn't you?
Yeah, she gave me the look. She's like, yeah, you know. But anyway, so that that one, I will say my 10-year-old kid was a little bit like, what is going on? I'm like, just remember. I was like, remember, it's scripted. I'm like, you're safe. This is not – because it – like, I mean, I've never been to a show like that. Yeah. I know there's a lot of people that are just fans of, like, that style. It's chaotic as hell, dude, because it's literally – like, dude.
And they pay an arm and a leg to get into those seats. You become part of the show, you know. Like, I've seen it where they embrace it. But, yeah, you have to be situationally aware of what's going on, because you could turn to one side, watch one group of guys, and not realize somebody's about to slam into your railing.
And they were being pretty cool. Like, so there were like two guys were like out on the concourse, like in the
crazy.
They're going, but I will, like, there was one point where one guy threw another dude into like the chairs that we were sitting in, and I did hear, like, as he was trying to set up, he was like, move, like he was trying to let people know, like, get out of the way, you know, like trying to give them a little spot or whatever, you know, trying to make people aware. Because that was the only thing that concerned me. I was like, dude, what if somebody's not paying attention? You do got to pay attention.
Yeah.
So that one my son didn't quite love as much, but I was like, bro, we're here, we got you. Remember, it's scripted, we're having fun. Yeah. It's all entertainment.
That's because they're tearing down the fourth wall at that point.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to watch everything and you're able to keep yourself separated from it. But when they're actually interacting with you, and whether you want it or not, it changes the whole game.
It really does. You know? I can see
where that
as weird as that stuff
somebody.
Is, as weird as that stuff is, I can see why people like that, because it does feel like you're feeling like part of the danger, like you're part of, like, in, like, now you're part of the show. You know what I mean?
And you know you're going to get on TV if you're sitting right around those seats too.
Oh, 100%.
People get their 100%. Did they let people bring signs and do all of the kind
not
of stuff?
Not in our section, but there were people with signs and stuff like that. Actually, it's funny. So, where we were sitting, the station camera, like the hard camera, was behind us.
Okay.
So, we weren't on TV a lot because, like, you know, they're addressing that stationary camera a lot. But it was funny because...
So they're always looking up and over your head.
Yeah, but it's funny. In fact, this is terrible audio, but I'll show you this because you got to see this. It's pretty... So Joe from H-Town, our good friend, he sends me a picture of Eli on the broadcast.
Oh, nice.
But it's really funny because what you'll see is that I guess the camera kind of zoomed in and Eli was standing up and turned around. So it's just his little head down there in the bottom of it. It's like a wide shot of the ring, and he had stood up, and I guess they had framed it just right. And so just his little head is, and he stood up to turn around and talk to me, and Joe sends me this picture. And it's like just Eli's head down there
in
the bottom
hilarious.
Of the screen. Super funny. So that was all fun. And then, man, CM Punk came out for the main event. And I will say, and credit to Derek Brunson because he was the one that tweeted it, you know, and we had talked about this a little bit. Like when Punk came back and he had that moment – in Chicago, right, where the whole crowd's going crazy. And Derek Brunson's tweet I thought was spot on, where he was just like, why in the hell did you ever come do MMA, like, when this is what you had? And I had that same thought as he was coming out, like, you know, Cult of Personality's playing, he's up there on the stage, people are going crazy, you know, yelling his name, chanting his name. I'm like, why? And I know he had, like, problems with the WWE and whatever, but it's just like, dude.
Well, and at the end of it, I mean, that there was that, but he still wanted to challenge
he
himself.
He did. He loves that, you know? Dude, I mean, loves
it. It boiled
MMA.
Down to that. He wanted to challenge himself. He wanted to push himself, and he did it, you know, and he's going to always have that, you know, as well. But, man, that fucking walkout song is so cool.
It's a great walkout song.
I love that song.
It's a perfect song for a walkout because, you know.
I forget that he used that, but every time I hear it, I'm like, oh, that song's so
lights
good.
Go down, and you hit that guitar riff, and then all of a sudden the lights pop up, and it was cool. But,
so good.
Dude, I've never been more into a wrestling match in my entire life, man.
Well, I can honestly see why. But, I mean, I thought that the picture that you guys put afterwards, like, you could see the joy in your face and you could see it in Eli. But even in Phil's face, like, you could see he was enjoying that moment, being able to share that moment with, like, a friend. You know, like, that was really, really cool. You know, so regardless of what anybody ever says about, you know, his tenure with the UFC, the guy wanted to go out there and he used his stardom to get a shot. And he went out there and he gave it his all. And there's no shame about that.
And he is a legit good dude, man.
Yeah, he was always was very, very nice and cordial when I had to deal with him in the past, but just seeing him, you know, and listening to him on the broadcast, he's got a personality that he makes you feel like you know him. So I can see where people want to come up to him afterwards and just be like, yo, Punk, blah, 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 blah. I think it's because a lot of times, even just outside of being a fan of his work in the cage and doing that sort of stuff, the way his personality comes across, he comes off very, very friendly, that you just feel like you know the guy and you want to come up and just say hey to him. So for him to go back in there and actually get the belt, I was wondering if they were going to do it. I didn't know if maybe they would just give him a shot and then maybe give it to him later. So when I saw later on and you were like he was able to get it, I was like, wow.
But they did it perfect. They said, and this is, and as I say, like, again, I haven't watched wrestling in years, right? Yeah. I mean, I watched wrestling when I was a little kid. When I found out it was scripted, I didn't enjoy it as much. But obviously, seeing my friend Punk wrestle is amazing. But they set it up perfectly because so it's like a back and forth match. Everything's going on, right? The guy picks up Punk and, like, spins him around. Punk accidentally kicks the referee in the head. So the referee's down. So the referee's out, and the Hangman Page is the guy's name, sees the belt over there and was like thinks about, like, I'll just use this as a weapon, because he'd already tried to use it as a weapon once, and then, like, the referee's out. So he looks at it, and he's like, you know, you can see, like, the theater of, like, I'm considering, what should I do? Like, Punk is hurt, the ref's down, like, I could use that and go hurt him really bad. And he's like, and he just kind of shakes it off and throws it down, and he goes to attack Punk without using the weapon. Punk counters and gets the victory just as the ref is waking up. So it's like,
nice.
So you made your champion, like, oh, he had to make the moral decision, you know, and he made the right decision, but he paid the price for it because Punk capitalized. And it's not really Punk's fault because, but he capitalized, so now it sets up you know what I mean? It's like perfect. What great writing where it's like you made your champ make this moral decision. He made the right decision and paid for it anyway, so now you can still cheer for him. You know what I mean? I was like, that's brilliant, because I thought the same thing.
so like, that it sets up like a rematch. You don't hate the guy, and you actually have people that were wanting him to maybe.
Yeah, but
get
he
it
got
back
wrong. He could have cheated, and he didn't. And then now, you know, so it's like brilliant writing. Yeah, so it's cool, man. You know, it's funny. Like I'm not saying that I would like go to every show or whatever, but I really me and my again, any parent will understand watching your kid have a good time. That changes the level of everything. And then to see my buddy Punk in there was super cool. I'd definitely go anytime he was around. Like I'd go watch him because it's fun, you know. But
especially keeps giving you those seats.
I mean, that helps.
Yeah,
it was fun. It was a special experience. So
that's awesome.
All right. That's over. Now it's time for some mixed martial arts. I promise you, it is.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, UFC Fight Night 207. We just left Media Day. The start of, what's the stat they keep throwing there? 11 straight weeks of UFC action. So after a week off, we're hot and heavy back into it. Although, it is traveling around a little bit. I know neither of us are going to Singapore. Nope. So, you know, it's not us every week. But this week it is Alexander Volkov and Jairzinho Rozenstrike. You know, I think we kind of knew coming into Media Day today that it wasn't going to be the craziest Media Day of all time. First of all, we had a lot of foreign speakers, which obviously, I'm not saying it's bad that somebody doesn't speak English, but in terms of captivating video content and that sort of stuff, when it goes to the translator, it's just not quite the same. So I think we knew kind of coming in
the translator was very good.
Translator is phenomenal, as always. I think we knew that it wasn't going to be, you know, the most exciting. And then you have Volkov and Rozenstrike, who, you know, while dangerous fighters and capable of doing big things, they're not big speakers, either
one of
them.
Yeah, they're not going to talk – talk a bunch of smack up
neither
there.
One. I mean, Jairzinho may have got the closest to talking trash he ever has in his whole life cause when he was just like, I don't think he's going to stand with me.
I tried setting him up with the chin thing. I was like, you know, so hey, is you think his chin's going to be suspect? You know, you think it's going to be an easy shot? And he's like, oh, is that true? Oh, I'm glad they said that. You know, I'll have to pay
Thank
attention.
Thank you for the people that said I didn't know that. I appreciate that.
You're doing it wrong.
Yeah, too
I was
funny.
Like, that was what you call, I set you up, a T-ball there.
It's interesting, right, because both guys have had some setbacks recently, and so they're looking to rebound. It's an important fight in terms of rankings, right? You're talking about number 7 versus number 8, so it is meaningful. But it was funny because, you know, I was taping our betting preview for Sports Illustrated with Justin Barrasso the other day. I can't remember if he said it during our taping or when we were talking before, and so I'll have to see the finished product. But he mentioned the fact that it's – and I think it sucks to kind of say this, but it's accurate in terms of the excitement level. It's just with the kind of new elite blood that's coming into the heavyweight division, you struggle seeing these guys ranked among the very, very best, right? Like 7 and 8 is pretty much where they reside. You know what I mean? I struggle seeing either one of these guys making a title run. You know, I struggle. It's not there. So, you know, when you have that situation, it's like it's a big fight, you know, but that kind of caveat does kind of temper my enthusiasm a little bit. And here's the other one, because, again, this was in the betting preview, but Justin was like, hey, man, two heavyweights, a lot of knockouts between them. Should we just automatically go for the round one prop? And I'm like, no, like both these guys have a tendency to kind of be moderately paced, I should say, and not necessarily incredibly aggressive and not necessarily, you know what I mean? So it's like, I could see this fight going 5 rounds. I mean, I really could. And I can see that even though both these guys have the capability of turning out the lights, that it doesn't happen right away and that, you know, that we get some plotting in there.
It goes 5 rounds. It's going to be such a stinker. People are just going to be like, ugh. Because, I mean, like, who wants to see 5 rounds? When people think of heavyweights, they think of big smashing blows, you know, lots of just throwing dudes around. And at 5 rounds, you're not getting that.
I know.
You're getting a lot of, you know, careful plotting, you know, a lot of respect for your opponent's strength, you know. And so hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully you don't get 5 rounds of that. But you're right. I agree
I'm
with you completely.
I'm just saying, don't be surprised. And if you get if you're the kind of likes to bet over unders, I would take a look at those over numbers and see what you can get.
At least getting them maybe like the 3rd round or so, or at least something, because then you feel at some point one of these guys. Because if it is a matter where they've been in a lot of clinching, a lot of wrestling, somebody's going to be tired.
Right.
So by the time that 3rd round, somebody I'd imagine is going to be wearing down to the point where maybe some of the shots weigh in. But you're right. I think if there is an attempt for one of these guys to try to make another run towards the top, it has to start with this win. And then whoever loses, you know, I guess maybe we just hang that gatekeeper tag right on them, you know, and just say, hey, if you guys are going to get to the top of the division, where they're still dangerous, they still have value. But you're right. I mean, this new crop of fighters, but that's even like light heavyweight. Some of these guys coming in. Shoot, we had a guy, who was it that was there today, that was fighting. Is he fighting? He last fight like heavyweight, or is he fighting heavyweight? But then he also said he wanted to fight middleweight.
Oh, that's the newcomer, Askar Mozorov.
Yeah. I was like, this dude is nuts. I mean, he's coming in at light heavyweight for this one, and he's talking about being at like middleweight. And you look at his last like two fights were 265.
Yeah.
Like, kudos on your body being able to like morph like that. But he was 100% serious in the fact that he thought he could get down to middleweight. The new breed of these cats coming in and fighting these at this light heavyweight and some of these guys, they're just a whole different breed, man. The physicality of these guys coming in, and I almost look like, you look at Jairzinho, he's so just a hulk of a dude, but like I don't see the flexibility in his game that you see some of these new cats coming in. That are able to sort of morph. They're like, yes, I might be a smaller heavyweight. I'm never going to hit 265, but I'll jump down and I have the physicality to go down to light heavyweight, which for some of these guys, and then they're able to go more, I think they have the better skills and be able to get onto the ground and do all these ground game. They have better submission skills. And a lot of these other guys, they just don't have it. Volkov does, in my opinion, between these two, is a better, well-rounded, has more experience overall. So I think he has more weapons, and he just needs to stay away from the striking of Jairzinho, kind of grind him down a little bit, wear him down a little bit. But at least between the two of them, he's the one that I see that has more dangerous weapons. But even he, we've seen what happened to him in his last one against one of these new cats that's coming up that has power, but also has one hell of a ground game as well. You know, I mean, I hate to like call these guys both at like sort of like gatekeepers now, but at where they're at right now, I feel like that's the best terminology of where they're going to go. Well, whoever wins has a shot to at least try to go up, but we've seen both of them deal with the guys up above them.
Well, and remember, we always say gatekeeper is not a disrespectful term.
It's not disrespectful at all.
It's just reality of like, there's a level.
Right.
And if you're going to get to this elite level, you got to get through me. You know what
and
I mean?
And especially this is gatekeeper to the top 10.
Yeah.
That's one hell of a distinction, you know?
But I think you're right. I just struggle seeing either one of these guys winning a title, so I think that's an accurate description. Ultimately, I lean Volkov in this because of exactly what you said. I see him utilizing the wrestling. When Jairzinho says, I don't think he's going to strike with me, I think he's going to try to take me down, I agree. Like, I don't even think it's trash talk. Like, I mean, if you're Volkov, yeah, sure. You know, try to use that big body that you got. Try to use that range that you got. But you know, if Jairzinho lands, you're going to hurt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So why even give him that opportunity? If Jairzinho is not on his feet throwing big shots, like, Jairzinho is not going to triangle choke you off his back or something like that. So it's why wouldn't you? Is you know, I don't even know if Jairzinho is going to hurt you in the clinch if you have him pinned up against the fence. You know, is he really going to do damage in there? You know, I don't think about him as like, oh, he's got those tricky little uppercuts he'll throw in there.
He separates and he's throwing a nasty little elbow or something.
Right? No.
It's almost like he's just waiting out until the guy's arms tire down so they can separate again or something.
It's very much like a Derek Lewis type thing to me where he's like, you know, just let me be at range. Let me just land that one shot and that's all I need, you know?
That's
all it takes.
Because that's all it takes. How cool is that to be able to know that you'd have like that one shot power that these are the best guys in the world, and still, like, these guys have technique and power that it's just, like, one shot, and then it's done.
I mean, you tell me, Kimbo Slice. I mean, I don't I don't know.
This was not a top-level guy that was opponent.
All right. So, listen, that was amazing.
This guy ain't breaking the top 1 million.
Co-main event I do find very intriguing for a couple of reasons. First of all, Mostar Evloev, I believe, is a badass. I believe he's a future title contender, potential future champion. I am all about Mostar Evloev. I believe he deserves all the skill in the world. I appreciate the fact that he's learning English. He's doing his best to answer everything in English. He says, look, I win here. I think I need one more big name. Hopefully that'll be enough to give me a title shot. He says it all in English. It's not the most emotion-filled, inflection-filled English, but it's English, you know what I mean? And I can appreciate that. Like, it does help. So I appreciate that he's doing that. And he even says, like, I'm going to try to get better at undefeated, 15-0. You know, it's hard to get to that mark, you know, no matter who you're facing. I think this guy's the real deal. Against Dan Ige, who has had a couple setbacks, but against elite-level competition. And if you look at it, it's crazy. He goes from Zombie to Emmett to Mosar. If you look at his opponent's records, even though he's had two losses, they keep getting better.
Someone's like, they're getting better.
You know, isn't that weird? Yeah. Like, I mean, damn. And kudos to him for being willing to take those fights. But I don't know, man. I thought he was very insightful. And I mean, he's always very insightful and honest. But today, you know, talking about the setbacks and talking about where he needs to be and the realizations that he's had, I thought it was really good. And so we'll let you hear from Dan Ige as well. And understand that when the conversation comes in about Amber Heard and this, it was because the trial, which I have not watched a single minute of.
I know, I didn't either.
The only thing I know is that she pooped in his bed, and that's all I know. That's literally the only thing I know about the whole trial.
In fact, that's how they coined the phrase, shit the bed, right?
It was her right there. So if, when that comes in, if you wonder why the hell that was asked about, it was because at that moment,
the jury made their decision and then they passed judgment or
that's
whatever.
That's it. All right. So here is Dynamite Dan Ige.
How's it going?
What's going on, Dan? I mean, you go from Zombie to Emmett to the undefeated guy. I mean, do you ever go like, hey, can we slide back a little bit? What are we doing here?
Nah, man. I was just talking to Gavin about that and, you know, I've been really thinking about it, and that's what my legacy is going to be at the end of the day, the guy who's fought anyone and everyone. And I was just saying, like, I'd be a coward if I tried to choose an easy route to the top. And I want to be the guy that's known that's fought the best guys in the world. And that's all I'm out here to do, is to test myself and to grow as a fighter and to eventually reach the top.
I was going to say, I mean, in some ways, it's like a compliment, right? They keep giving you guys that have better records each time out. I mean, do you take that as maybe a sign of respect from the organization?
A little bit. I mean, I really don't think too much into it. I'm sure there's not a whole lot of guys out there, especially in the top 10, top 15, that wants to fight a undefeated Russian that's just coming up the rankings that not a lot of people know. But I'm that guy, and I find some type of pleasure to give a guy his first loss. So, you know, that's what I look at in all this, you know, when they offer me that opponent. And I'm usually not one to turn down a fight. I don't think I've ever turned down a fight, actually. So here I am a few days away and get to do this thing again.
Didn't necessarily get the results you wanted the last couple times out, but just curious what you thought about your performances. I mean, you are taking guys to the distance. You're putting on good fights. I mean, do you take any comfort in your performance?
You know, I mean, a little bit, but not really, man. I just, like my last fight, for instance, it was a close fight. You can argue both ways, but at the end of the day, I didn't get my hand raised. And why? Because I didn't do enough. And, you know, when I look back at that, it's just like, what is it that's holding me back from getting to the next level? And, you know, it's those little moments and like taking risks, taking chances. And that's just something I've been focusing a lot in my life and in training, is just taking more chances in life. And I really think that will start to translate in my fighting career. And I feel like I'm growing a lot. I feel, you know, I'm on a fresh slate, if you want to call it that. You could say I'm, you know, 0-2 in my last two fights, but I see myself as 0-0. It sounds cheesy to say, but I'm a new person, and I'm starting fresh, and I'm having fun with this again. I kind of grew kind of bitter over the sport over the last year, and I put a lot of pressure on myself when I became a dad. Like, I had to financially provide for my family, and that was just an extra pressure I didn't really need, because I never got into this sport for money. I got into this to be the best in the world, and I knew eventually money would come. But, you know, you start making decent money, and then you, like, hear all the topics about fighter pay. You can get bitter over the sport real quick. And so I just, taking financials away, like, I tried to get back to my roots. Like, what got me to the UFC? I was fighting for 10 free tickets. I fought for free my first pro fight, and then I fought for $500. Like, it was never about the money. It was to be the best. And that's kind of the mindset I have again. And, you know, money is nice. You know, I can always make money because I know how to work hard. So, you know, I'm not thinking about that. I'm just thinking about winning and having fun and going out there and performing.
Awesome. When did you reach that realization? Was it after the last fight or?
You know, I had a little bit after the zombie fight, you know, because that fight, I was very emotional. I've never had that type of emotion like before a fight. And I think it's because I was becoming, because going in the Gavin Tucker fight, like I was just this, like, there was not a man that was going to beat me that night because I had like a different kind of, even my wife was about to give birth, but I was like, I was very protective. And like for the first time, I think just randomly at like coffee shops, like a guy was smoking a cigarette and I like snapped on the guy. I was like, hey, my wife's pregnant. Like, but that's not who I am. But it was like my protective dad instinct. And then it's like my son actually came into the world and it changed a whole lot of things. And I don't know, it just, like I said before, it became a financial thing. And I didn't really like take time to adapt becoming a father. I just tried to like force all these things I'm supposed to, like that I think I'm supposed to do, but no one knows what to do, especially that for that first child in the first year of life. But I think I'm growing, I'm adapting, and I'm just becoming a better father, better human, better person. I'm grounded, I'm connected with my family, I'm connected with God again, and I'm just, I feel good. I feel enlightened, refreshed, and I'm happy.
Talk about the preparation for this fight, I guess. Was it just like nonstop wrestling all day, every day?
Kind of, man. I reached out to Sean Shelby. It's funny because after the Emmett fight, it was so close that I wanted to just almost get right back in there right away. And then after about a month, I was like, okay, I'll take a little time after I put some pounds on and took some time off. But I had reached out to Sean and like mid-January, I was in Hawaii, and I told him I'd, you know, like to take a little time off, maybe fight in about around May, June. And right in February, he offered me Movistar, and I was like, okay, that's 17 weeks. Sweet. We'll take it. But once I got the bout agreement, I can't shut my mind off. So I've pretty much been going nonstop. But I've kept it fun. You know, I've went and trained different places. I did a little secret mini Russian training camp for 3 weeks, and then I went to Denver, Colorado. I kind of had the Rocky mindset that I'm fighting freaking Drago, undefeated Drago, and here I am, Rocky. So I went to Colorado Mountains, trained with Justin Gaethje for a month. I lived at his house, and then I came back to Vegas. It was my son. I couldn't miss his birthday. Son's first birthday. Then I still had like 9 weeks to prepare, so I just been grinding here, and I'm in the best shape of my life, and I don't think I could be any more prepared.
Last thing for me, you know, kind of knowing the realizations you've had, the mindset you've had, I mean, does the result of the fight matter to you, or is this more about just the performance that, you know, you go in there, you do your best, you enjoy it, you know, you take it in, is that enough?
I really do see myself winning this fight, but it's not about the, for me, it's not about the result, the trophy, the performance. It's about me going in there and being free and having fun with this. You know, I think I've been in this sport for a while now, and I've been there at the top. I've been there when I was on a 6-fight win streak and I had the company behind me, pumping me out, giving me main events. And you buy into your own hype a little bit. And you start to believe this, you're this person who you really aren't. You know, I'm just a normal person like every other fighter in this, but you buy into your own hype. And I think, you know, my opponent's probably experiencing that right now. 15-0, it's kind of hard not to be a little confident and cocky. And, you know, you got the odds makers behind them, you got the freaking, the media and the everyone saying, oh my God, this guy's unstoppable. Like, he's just another human being like myself, and he's had an equal amount of time to prepare. And you know, we'll see what happens Saturday night, but I'm confident I'm gonna go in there and get the W.
Hey Dan, What's the super secret Russian camp that you went to?
It was here in Vegas, but I don't want to. When it all happened, it was just like a weird political time with like the war and everything, and I don't want to get anyone in trouble just because like I was out there grinding. That's all that matters. You know, I've actually trained with the Russians a lot. I've trained with Khabib. I've trained with Islam Makhachev. I've trained with all the best guys that are the top Russian prospects in this game. And, you know, now I get to fight one. But I've done a lot of training with them in the past. And there's I know, although they're all a little bit different, they have a similar approach and a similar style. So I'm used to the style, and I've gotten hundreds of rounds, literally hundreds of rounds with these guys where I was sparring three times a week, and that's something I never do, but I followed the Russian training program where I'm sparring three times a week and grappling every single day, and I can't count how many rounds that I've gotten with them. So, yeah, that's all, that all adds up, and here I am.
You say that, you know, you've wrestled with Khabib and Islam and all of the killers over in Extreme Couture. On tape, what do you think of Movzar's wrestling?
I think his wrestling is really good. Overall, as an MMA fighter, he's really good. He's able to put everything together really well. His ability to anticipate and know when guys are, like, he knows when to fit in on takedowns and knows when to strike with guys. And typically when you watch him fight, if he has a little bit better stand-up, he won't even go to the wrestling. He'll just stay and strike with guys if he has a little bit better stand-up. But I think it's what we haven't seen from Movzar, and what we haven't seen is his ability to face adversity. I've faced a lot of adversity in my life, and I've overcome a lot of obstacles and a lot of mountains, and I've climbed a lot of mountains as well. And you know, he's on the mountaintop right now, but he doesn't know there's another valley ahead of him to get to the next peak, and that's me. I'm the valley, so I'm excited to be the one to, you know, put a one on his record. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, he's a great fighter. He's a great test, and I'm just excited.
Did you also go out to Arizona?
I did. Yeah. I thanks for reminding me. Yeah. I went and trained with Cejudo for 5 days. I went out, trained with him, and then I went to the fights to support Justin. But yeah, that was a nice little, I guess you could call it downtime, because we didn't train super hard, but we broke down like just the fundamentals, the philosophy of fighting. He explained to me his philosophy, and you know, I just try to take little bits and pieces from all the greats, from Khabib, from Justin Gaethje, from Henry Cejudo, and all the guys that I've been able to be around and learn from, and to make it my own, make my own style, and make my own. I don't even know. I feel like I've really grown a lot, but I've taken that time. Say if I got this fight on like a 8-week notice, I wouldn't have the courage to go out and like get out of my comfort zone and go to Colorado and do things out of my typical normal routine. But because I had 17 weeks to prepare, I got to like actually make it fun and do different things and get out of my comfort zone, because I knew I had so much time to like. It's always the anxiety you get is more so about like being in shape and making weight within 8 weeks, but having 17 weeks, there's no excuse for me to not be in shape. And so it's given me that freedom, and having that freedom has also kind of just enhanced my mind and my spirit to go out there and have fun and take risk and yeah.
Awesome. And finally for me, when Rocky win, what'd you go with the t-shirt choice?
I don't know, it's just like a little symbolism, like I stated earlier, I'm fighting Drago, man. I'm fighting Khabib, and I'm Rocky. I'm the guy they count out. You know, I'm not supposed to win this fight. That's what the odds say. I'm not supposed to win, but don't believe in that shit.
Awesome. Thank you.
Dan, thanks for taking the time. Heading into the fight, you know, co-main, you've been here, main, all that. How great has the experience been to be able to get the father, Danny Ige, the believe the hype, Danny Ige? Like, what have you taken little by little to put together the best version of yourself?
You know, it's literally just time, because you learn, you can't learn something right away. Everything takes time, and that's how you build perseverance, is going through, you know, daily struggles, learning new things. Becoming a father was very hard. I'm super blessed and fortunate to have a great wife who, you know, does a majority of the parenting, so I can go out there and, you know, work hard. She helps me help her at the end of the day, or yeah, vice versa. So we definitely help each other. We have a good team, a good structure, and I think that's super important, because I was a very selfless fighter, I guess, and this is a selfish sport, they say, and being selfish was something that I've always had a hard time with. So it's like, literally, like, after training, I should be focusing on what am I going to feel, what am I going to put in my body, but my first instinct is, okay, what does my wife need to eat, and what does my son need to eat, and then I'll just eat whatever they eat. But it's like, this is something you grow, like, in a marriage, grow as a team. We had this conversation right before fight camp. I was like, hey, let's just, like, talk about this now, and so there's no, like, expectations. Like, either I'm going to fend for myself for every meal to make sure I'm fueled, or you're going to make me every meal. And she's like, okay, you fend for yourself. So that was, like, something that's definitely taken a lot of stress off my plate, because I do stress a lot about, you know, my family and my other livelihood. But now it's just, like, I've figured out how to kind of separate them. Even though they're my fuel, they're my motivation, you kind of have to separate family and fighting, because it's a crazy sport, and it's a brutal and a ruthless sport. And at the end of the day, it's like, I got another guy trying to essentially kill me. If there's no ref in there, like, we're trying to kill each other. That's what we do. And I mean, you could look at this as a sport and points and all that, but, like, no, you have to go in there with a killer instinct. And I kind of didn't have that. Speaking of my last fight, like, I didn't have that with Josh Emmett. He's a nice guy. I remember we're, like, I've had not really a relationship, but, like, being around him at the PI when he was doing his knee rehab, I was doing, like, shoulder rehab, and, like, he was always a nice guy. And then we're at the weigh-ins, literally about to walk out on stage. It was, like, me, my coach Eric, Josh, and Joey, his coach, and we're just chatting the whole way, all the way up till we face off. And something in me, like, didn't really want to hurt him, because I was talking to Justin Gaethje after the fight, and he's like, did you want to kill him the whole time? I'm like, good question, but no, maybe for a split second I wanted to kill him, but there was never, like, I didn't want to kill him the whole time. So you have to take away that, like, personal relationship. So I'm sure Movsar is a nice guy, but I see him as a little evil bastard trying to take away from my family. So I'm going to go out there and, yeah, treat him that way.
All right, man. And lastly for me, not that Dan Balboa needs any more motivation, but your opponent let us know that he's predicting a first-round finish. Comments on that?
He could predict whatever he wants. I've never been finished in my career. I've fought the absolute killers of killers in this division, and if he's any different, he hasn't finished anyone in his career. And he finished some guys in the regional promotions, but never in the UFC, and he hasn't fought the high level guys that I've faced and I've finished. So yeah, I mean, hopefully he can back up his talk, but at the end of the day, we're gonna fight, and, you know, good luck to him.
I'm a man. Thank you, and good luck on Saturday.
Thank you.
Is that the most Justin Gaethje question ever?
Yeah, well, no, yeah, I don't know, dude. Yeah. No, for real. Talk about like learning how to take risks. Just go surround yourself. Like go live with Justin Gaethje for a month, and it's a crazy mother effort.
This is a slightly off-topic question. I have no idea if you'll care about this. Did you care that Johnny Depp just beat Amber Heard in court and got $15 million off her?
I don't know. Good for him. I don't really follow those. I see a little bit online and like read the memes and stuff, but I didn't really get into the case. But $15 million, good for him.
I've got another one for you. Have you ever in an argument pooped in your bed?
Never. Neither has my wife, so.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Sure thing. Sweet. Okay, thank you.
All right, so Dan Ige, keeping it real as always. And by the way, I love that quote from Justin Gaethje as well. I just thought that was amazing. He's like, you know, can you imagine a more Justin Gaethje thing to say? Like, did you want to kill him the whole time? Because if you didn't, you got to go in there wanting to kill him the whole time. I'm like, that's just Justin Gaethje being 100% honest. That's just him.
That's Justin Gaethje at 6 in the morning probably.
That's so true.
He's like, I wake up ready to kill somebody.
I love it, man. So, listen, a tough assignment for Dan Ige, but, you know, I love what he says. You know, it's look, I believe I can win this fight. And yet, look, he is right about the fact that I guess if there's a, you know, a silver lining or whatever, it's that Mosar hasn't been just straight finishing people. So, you know you're going to have to deal with pace. You know you're going to have to deal with wrestling, but – you know, maybe you feel like, hey, at least I know I got some, you know, I got some opportunities to deal with it. Michael Trezano versus Lucas Almeida. Lucas Almeida, the newcomer, impressive record. This looks like it should be fun on paper. Pauliana Botelho versus Karina Silva. A little Brazil on Brazil action there.
Yeah.
Pauliana Botelho definitely, you know, needs a win. And straight up said, you know, I believe I'm fighting for my job here. So, you know, she's had a couple losses. She's had some rescheduled fights. She thinks she needs to get it done. Odey Osborne versus Zaruk Adashev. That looks like it could be a very, very fun fight on paper. Odey Osborne, too, if you haven't checked out, again, we did have a lot of foreign language today, so maybe the scrums might not be quite as exciting, but Odey Osborne, great personality, another very honest, very insightful, very open person. And he had a great scrum and also shared some recommendations for some Jamaican food.
Yeah.
It was a fun one. So I'd recommend checking out.
Could you tell
out.
We were very hungry at that point?
Everybody was waiting for lunch to come in, asking a lot of food questions. Poor guy's cutting weight, and y'all are hungry asking about food. Zaruk Adashev, who had a great fight last time out. So, I mean, on paper, that should be good. Alonzo Minifield and the aforementioned Askar Mozdorov. Alonzo Minifield always he's not the most how would you say? He doesn't speak in long sentences. He's pretty quick and direct, but I think he's got a great sense of humor and a great little quick wit.
Yeah, you wonder sometimes if he's having a good time being up there, but then he'll say something and then he's like smiling like, oh, that was a joke.
Like, that was a joke. All right. So if you're not familiar with this Askar Mozdorov situation, his record was changed in some of the major databases this week from I want to say it was like 29-7 to 25-11, I think, is the adjustments that were made. But Sherdog actually put out this article about, really criticizing the dude about saying that, you know, him and his team have really been kind of a pain in their ass over the years of trying to get his record falsified, basically. And Askar explained it. He's like, look, I did have a different name at one point, but, so that caused part of the confusion. I fought in China. That caused part of the confusion. So he kind of said, look, there's a whole bunch of confusion about it. Like, I promise we weren't trying to be shady about anything. So, okay, I mean, what's he going to say? Like, yeah, we were trying to be shady the whole time. You know, what's he going to say? But Alonzo Minifield is funny, like, asking him, like, hey, so have you seen all this? And, what's going on? And he was like, it's preposterous. It's madness. And I thought that was hilarious, man. Like, that was that dry sense of humor where he's just, throwing it out there. But then he had a great quote to follow up. And he's like, look, I'm anxious to see how he fights on Saturday night. We're gonna find out. We're going to find out.
Yep.
So interesting there. So this Askar Mozdorov, I think, is a bit of a question mark. Is he impressive? Is it the work of falsification? We'll find out. And then, look, the prelims.
Did he really fight in all those weight classes?
Yeah, exactly. That'd be funny to find out. That's not even the same guy. Like, So the prelims, actually some of the prelims on it are pretty entertaining. And by the way, an early day on Saturday, right? I want to say first fight like 10 a.m. our time.
I think it's even earlier than that. Maybe like 9:45.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know. I feel like it's really, really early. Maybe it is 10 something. Still, that's amazing because it's supposed to be done at like 4 p.m. Pacific time.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
We'll take that.
That is awesome. The sun will still be out. That is a rarity to leave a Vegas event with the sun still out.
So true. So true. But look, Felice Herrig versus Karolina Kowalkiewicz. That's intriguing. I imagine Cole Coffey finds it especially intriguing.
I do. I do like that one. I do like that one, even though I will tell you, I like that Botella one as well.
Joe Selecki versus Alex Da Silva. Damon Jackson is there against a late replacement. Nicholas Stolce is back against Benoit St. Denis. Tony Gravely is there against Johnny Munoz.
That should be a good one.
I like Jeff Molina versus Zhaga Zhumagulov. That's probably my most anticipated fight on the prelims, man. I love that fight a lot. You got Aaron Blanchfield, J.J. Aldrich on there. So, I think the prelims should be a lot of fun. And I think overall this card could be fun. And it's an early card. It's not keeping us there late. I think that's going to be good. So, we'll have full coverage this weekend. I did want to say, by the way, I had a question that I wanted to answer here because I actually happened to hear the answer to this. Ryan Hall had put out that he had just signed. This was JT_lines on Twitter hit me up. Ryan Hall said he had just signed to fight in August. Any idea if he had an opponent? Just curious who they were going to give him. And he said, I'll hang up and listen, which is funny because it's a tweet. I did actually hear that the idea for Ryan Hall before he completely blew out his ACL was he was going to fight one Pat Sabatini, so CFFC's own. So I happened to hear that while I was out there this weekend. And kind of bummed that fight didn't happen, man. I think that would have been a great fight, Sabatini versus Hall. I love the matchmaking on that. But ACL blew out, so he's out. And now Sabatini's got to find a new opponent. So answering that question. All right, listen, I should also say, by the way, if you like what you listen to, make sure you do us a favor. Go rate us, review us. We need that. You know what I'm saying? We need to help grow the podcast if you can, and all those things help us out. And if you want to take your support to the next level, head on over to patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow for as little as $3 a month. You can help support the show and get exclusive access to the and a half episodes that we do after every UFC event, including this weekend. I will do one in the early evening hours of Saturday.
That being said, we got to give a big shout out to Sam. I want to say, now that I read his last name, it's spelled O-C-T-I-G-A-N. At first when I read it, I was like, oh, Octagon. I was like, or is he trying to be Sam Octagon?
I think so.
I think he is as well, and I didn't get that at first. I would have said something when I said my little welcome message, but welcome to the family, Sam. We appreciate you, brother. So his money, I think he's over there in Australia.
Ooh.
So he's down under. That was my best I could do for you, Sam.
Hey, that's I don't even know what that was.
I don't either.
You're not going to take advantage of it to drop a C-bond?
I don't want to. Well, yeah. You sick cunt. Welcome to the team. Now he's either going to quit and not be our member or not. But no, we appreciate you guys. But yeah, welcome to the family, Sam. We appreciate you guys very, very much. You're all a bunch of sick cunt. Which is a good thing. If we're all down in Australia, it's not offensive.
Coffee can't wait to get back down to Australia. I love it.
I'm like,
C-bombs left and right.
What's the proper use of this? How can we? Can I use this in every phrase?
So funny.
That's sick.
So funny. Listen. The and a half episode we'll have this weekend. Neither of us will be traveling to Singapore, but that just means that we'll be able to get together and do a preview show from here, and maybe talk about some other stuff along the way. There is a ONE Championship on Friday. It is headlined by a kickboxing match. So, but again, you got the nice mix of kind of things on there.
Yeah,
so
it's very cool what they're doing.
I do. I've become a bigger fan of ONE lately with the mixed cards. If I'm being completely honest with you, man, I think I like those a lot more. So that's Friday, and then listen, we'll start getting busy again. Like I said, 11 straight weeks of UFC action. Bellator will be back. We got some CFFC cards coming up in July. International Fight Week coming. There's so much stuff working behind the scenes right now. I can't wait. Hopefully some of it comes to fruition and we can share all the news with you, because I think we got some fun stuff in the pipeline. In the meantime, I'm going to leave the Costa Cold Coffee so he can go to sleep.
I will stay up for a few more hours.
Training and waking up at like 5 a.m. in the morning.
I just have no energy to stay up late anymore. I just want to go to sleep.
Much respect to you. I actually got to get up early as well tomorrow. I got a early morning interview with Yuri Prohaska. So he's,
that should be fun.
I don't know if he's already over in Singapore or he's still in Thailand, but the hours are kind of off, so I got to get
over there. I think he'd want to get over there and start getting acclimated.
A lot of people were traveling already. I think I was supposed to talk to Valentina late last week, but it was the day I was flying to Philadelphia, and she was already on her way. So everybody's going over there pretty early. Which is interesting because, you know, they're going to be keeping those weird hours like we did in Fight Island where the fight's going to be in the middle of the night because the pay-per-view is going to be normal time. So it's weird. Like, you're going over there, and you're still trying to stay on a North America time, but – your body still needs to adjust. Like, that's a long-ass flight. Like, I would say, like, flying to Singapore and flying to Abu Dhabi are two of the worst jet lag I've ever had. Like, legit jet lag. Where, like, it's one thing, like, you travel from East Coast to West Coast or something like that, and you're like, yeah, I'm kind of tired or whatever. Those jet lags, it's like, I have to go to sleep right now or because my body is shutting down. You know what I mean? Like, I cannot stay up any longer. So, it seems like everybody's getting over there pretty early to
and
try to get
and the humidity. I just did look right now. It's 88% humidity now. 82 degrees. So, that's all. The temperature is going to be good.
It's 82 degrees, but the feels like it's like 107 or something.
1 million
you know?
Degrees. Yeah, that humidity is – that's no joke, man. That's just ridiculous. And you have to go over and get acclimated to that. I mean, granted, it's not like you're going to be fighting outside, but still, that just saps your energy.
100%. So we'll talk about all that next week. In the meantime, for all you over at patreon.com/Damon Roadshow, we'll wrap it up with the and a half. And obviously, feel free to reach out to us with any questions or comments or concerns that you have because you're family. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's how we
and
do.
And for the rest of you, you're not quite family, but we still like you.
We still like you.
We still like you. Thanks for listening.